Good evening. Thanks a lot, Rich. So here we are with the next series in our interviews with candidates in the supervisorial district. I'm here with Glenn McGordy, who's running in the first district, and that's Potter Valley, Redwood Valley, Talmadge. Can you introduce yourself and with a focus on your public service record?
Sure. Hi, Sarah. Really a pleasure to be here tonight and have the opportunity to talk to your audience. And I'm also glad that they're listening, too. Thank you for tuning in. So I'm Glenn McGordy. For the last 32 years, I've been working for the University of California Cooperative Extension as a farm advisor. And basically, I've been helping people grow crops and gardens and landscapes and plants. And I know a lot about wine grapes in particular, but also lots of other things as well. And I live in the first district. I'm the first house in the first district as you're coming from Hopland. So the fifth district is actually my backyard, and my front yard is the first district. It's so I decided to run because we live in a really beautiful place, and there's these lovely mountains and covered with oak forests, and we have two rivers, the Russian River and the Eel River, are both in the district. We have a lot of the flatland agriculture that's irrigated. We have these wonderful Russian River village communities of Potter Valley, Redwood Valley, Calpella, and Talmadge, plus the Eastern Hills, which is a kind of like a suburb of Ukiah. So it's a wonderful place in so many ways, and it's very beautiful, and all of us live there because we want to, not because we have to. But we have to take care of the landscape, and we have to take care of each other, and it's a very challenging time. So we have to be prepared for emergencies because they seem to happen more frequently than we'd like. And it could be fire, it could be flood, it could be no electricity. And the other thing about our district is that most of us live in kind of a rural setting. So we're our own power company sometimes. We're our own sewer company, our own water company. So we have to have a little bit of MacGyver in us to be able to live out there because you don't know what's going to get thrown at you. So public safety is something that we really care about and is something that we have to look at. I also, for the other candidates, kind of unusual in terms of the fact that I'm actually in county government already. I'm a department head. This is my second term. So the University of California Cooperative Extension is kind of like on loan to Mendocino County. So they're our landlord for sure, and we have a budget. They support our professionals from UC, but we have a county staff that helps us and looks after us. And I've done two terms, the first one in 1993 to 1997, and now I'm in the second one, which is started and when Greg Giusti retired in 2018. So I see from the inside also how things work. I've also had a lot of experience working on as public service and first on the Ukiah Parks and Rec Commission, which I did for 4 years. And then as a school board member for the Ukiah Unified School District, and that was a 4-year term as well. So I've worked with groups before, and in my job as a UC farm advisor, we have to kind of assess problems and design research and collect data, interpret it, and then communicate it. So I mean, these are skills that really set you up well to work in a situation like a board of supervisor. And finally, one last little thing I want to throw in is I was in the first graduating class of Leadership Mendocino. So I'm kind of fulfilling the destiny of actually being a leader, I hope.
Okay. Well, I want to let our listeners know that I'll be asking some questions for the first half, about 15 minutes. And then at quarter after, we're going to open up the phone lines. And so listeners can call in with questions for Glenn McGordy, running for supervisor in the first district. The number to call for that is 895-2448. And I think I'll jump right in. This last Board of Supervisors meeting this week was full of agricultural topics. And as the farm advisor, you seem positioned as the agricultural candidate. And one decision that was made about Measure V was to direct County Council to come back at the end of March with an enforcement plan. Mm-hmm. But leaving open some other options to, you know, do mitigations and come up with alternatives. And I'm wondering what your thoughts on Measure V are and if that was a satisfactory action to you.
Well, it passed, so it's the will of the people. So the Board of Supervisors is now obligated to figure out a way to enforce it. And it's going to be a challenge because there's some issues about dead trees, whether they came from hack and squirt or whether they came from sudden oak death or whether something else took them out. You know, they're dead, and they represent a safety hazard, particularly close to communities. So what we learned in Mendocino County is we can't. It's a really huge place. It's two-thirds the size of the state of Connecticut, and Connecticut has a population of 4 million. We have 88,000 people, so our population density is about the same as Elko, Nevada. So we have to sort of prioritize, okay, if we can't do everything, what can we do? And I think that's going to be partially how we decide how Measure V is going to be enforced. And obviously priority is going to be public safety near people and buildings.
Right. And Mendocino Redwood Company is the largest landowner and mm-hmm. the largest lumber company, and their representative has said that the company does not have a position on a lawsuit. But of course, they're not the only timber company. There are a lot of smaller lumber companies. And I'm wondering what your vision of enforcement would look like.
I don't really have one yet, okay. Quite honestly. I'm kind of, Ted Williams seems to be our leader on that, and I'm going to kind of follow what he thinks is the best thing to do. But it's going to be sort of nuanced because we also have conflicting state rules about pesticide use and about forestry practices. And, you know, that's kind of the fodder for a lawsuit. And we also have a right to farm law, which is something that in Mendocino County is that you can't declare a nuisance for an existing agricultural operation if you move in near it. So all these things are going to have to be sort of thought about as we go through the process of enforcing Measure V. But again, it passed. We got to do something.
Right. If the fight goes to court.
Oh, no, please, no.
You know, given that the current thinking seems to be that the county would be on the hook for the legal expenses of someone challenging this ordinance, would you be willing to take that risk?
Well, you know, I'm one vote of five, so we'll have to cross the bridge when we get there. I hope it wouldn't get to that because lawsuits are very expensive and they take time. And I'm not sure that, I don't think anybody voted for the ordinance hoping that we'd end up in court. I don't think that's what people were saying, yay, go legal team. So I'm hoping that we can find some way to compromise, which is always difficult because people feel really strongly about this. And again, personal safety, living in a rural area, I'm really sensitive to that because a river fire literally started down the street about 100 yards from where I live. And having experienced that, it's something you don't forget quickly.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get to climate change in a few minutes, but I want to tag on to something that you said about your willingness to follow the lead of someone who's got the expertise in an area. And another item that came up at the Board of Supervisors meeting was a big discussion about genetically modified organisms. Mm-hmm. And some of the people who had originally worked on Measure H back in 2003 and some environmental groups said that they had not been consulted. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on bringing in outside experts and then following their advice, whether they're informal stakeholder groups who were supposed to consult with staff or formal advisory groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question. And I have an old saying is, in God we trust and everyone else bring data. I think that's really important when we're making decisions that we have good information. I also think that it's important to talk to people who are affected. So to make a pronouncement from on high doesn't work very well, particularly on the level of the Board of Supervisors in Mendocino County. We need to engage, you know, hear from people. But in the end, the Board of Supervisors has to be brave enough to take advice and make a decision and not punt, because we have a lot of that in the past, and it's something that I'm committed to. If I'm elected, I'm not going to just sit on the board. I'm going to be active on the board, and it's going to be really important that we make decisions and make a plan and stick to it.
And I want to remind our listeners that if you have questions for Glenn McGordy, who would like to represent you in the 1st District, you can call 895-2448 at 6:15. There was another, not quite a companion item, but another moratorium that came up at this week's Board of Supervisors meeting, where industrial hemp is still under a moratorium, but the board is leaving open the option of starting a pilot program. And I understand mm-hmm. that your office is working on that.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed the meeting. It was a real barn burner, but unfortunately I have a day job, so I had to go out and work. But yeah, I've been on kind of a working group to look at a hemp ordinance. And, you know, we're at an interesting place in Mendocino. We could really use some new crops, and I could talk more about that later, but there are some real conflicts depending upon how you shape a hemp industry. So the road that Mendocino County, I think, is going to go down if we do this, is going to be down the road of hemp as production of CBDs. And it would be grown quite similarly, really, to cannabis. The big issue is that you have to have feminized clones. You can't bring in male plants because the pollen will disseminate and really mess up cannabis if they happen to be within 2 or 3 miles of where you're growing your hemp. So that's one of the really big issues that we'd have to be concerned about. And there would be a requirement for anybody who wants to grow hemp that they have feminized clones, and that also they agree to inspections and what we call roguing, which means basically pull the male plants out on site.
Right, and I think that hemp can do the same thing that cannabis does, where every now and then you get a hermaphrodite that just mm-hmm. sort of furtively pollinates everything.
The proper term is monacious.
Oh, okay.
Hermaphrodite refers to animals, but it's the same idea.
Okay, who's the plant biologist here? Yeah, and I think we heard an interview with a hemp farmer in Oregon who said that his crop had been, you know, not deliberately tampered with by some cannabis plants. And so the THC count in his hemp was a little too high, and he had to tear out.
Well, this is another big issue too, because state law is going to dictate how much THC you can have in. And I'm already advising people who are thinking of doing this. I said, do a second planting a little bit later, so that you can basically, like we do with wine grapes, blend back something with lower sugar. If your sugar gets too high, then you blend in some lower sugar grapes, and it'll fix that. And that would be one of my advice to people who are thinking of growing hemp, is to do actually 2 planting dates, one separated a little bit, so that you can lower the THC so that it's not an issue.
Okay, well, we could definitely talk about this for half an hour, but I'm going to move on to climate change.
Okay.
And you mentioned at a forum in Ukiah that you've already done some work with climate change, and that there's already several mitigation measures available here in Mendocino County that wouldn't be insanely expensive. So can you talk about how we can mitigate climate change? And
well, we're already doing it. We have a lot of trees, and trees fix carbon like nobody's business. So I've also worked a lot with organic and biodynamic growers and sustainable growers who cover crop and use compost, which is another way of fixing carbon into the soil. It basically, what we're doing is we're taking carbon out of the atmosphere, stabilizing it, and you know, that the two ways that work well are putting carbon in the soil, because it can hold 5 times the amount of carbon that the atmosphere can. So it's an amazing resource for putting carbon in. But the problem is sometimes you produce more carbon dioxide putting it into the soil than you would otherwise. And there you also have the risk of other greenhouse gases like methane forming. So you don't want to do that. You got to be really careful, and there's ways to avoid it. And I've done a lot of research on the whole topic of healthy soils. So there's a kind of like a nice little consortium of us working with the Resource Conservation District here locally and the Natural Resource Conservation Service. And we're working in Mendocino, Sonoma, and Napa counties collectively to develop a plan for assessing healthy soils and best practices to get there. And it centers around making your soils more resilient, because when we add carbon, it takes water better, it stores water better, and your plants grow better. So what's not to like? Meanwhile, any woody vegetation is also going to take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. When you think about Mendocino County and all the forests that we have, you know, literally millions of acres, we can fix a lot of carbon. And we need, that should be one of the things we do, is get a net balance carbon sheet right off the bat to see what are the emissions of these 88,000 people who live in Mendocino County and the people who drive through it, and what are we fixing with our forests.
And I think you mentioned a carbon budget. What would that take? And it sounds like you just described what it is, but who's qualified to do that kind of work?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not quite sure. Certainly, on a smaller scale, we have carbon farm planning, which the Resource Conservation District does. On a larger scale, you're going to get into the area of atmospheric scientists, and we'd need help from the outside. That's not something that we're just going to do in an afternoon at the Board of Supervisors session. So I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Well, listeners, if you're interested in posing a question to Glenn McGordy, the number to call is 895-2448, and the phone lines are open. But if you don't have any questions, I am going to charge ahead. One of the things I'd like to ask you about is Measure B, and I'd like our listeners to know that your wife is Jan McGordy, who represents the Behavioral Health Advisory Board on the 11-member Measure B committee, and we've got a caller. So, caller, you are live on the air. You're not live on the air. Hello, caller?
Hello?
Yes, you're live on the air. Do you have a question for supervisorial candidate Glenn McGordy?
I wanted him to talk about water.
Oh, yes, great. Of course, water. So that's something
okay,
else.
Okay, and I'll hang up.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, yes, that's one of the biggest challenges probably facing the first district are water issues and the Potter Valley project relicensing rises to the top of something that's a huge concern, because so much of our community is dependent on the water that comes from the Eel River, starting in Potter Valley and going all the way down to Healdsburg and beyond, maybe into Marin County. So we're looking at having to relicense the Potter Valley project because PG&E is no longer going to do that. So that's going to take some real smart thinking on our part to be sure that, A, we get the water we need to continue living the lifestyle that we like here. And second of all, if it's expensive, then we're going to have to find a way to monetize it. And I would love to have a little surtax on everything that leaves our borders and heads for Marin County. If we can do that, that would be really smart.
What about the water customers who are, you know, paying a small amount of water from the Potter Valley Project and may in the future need to pay more? Is there any kind of preparation that you think people should be doing for the possibility of Scott Dam being altered or removed?
Well, we have to think about that because there's a lot of stakeholders involved in this thing with a lot of different ideas about how the water ought to be managed. And I've had these conversations with a wide variety of people who, by the way, support me. So I've had some friends say, we got to... water rights, it's my property, I'm going to do what I want. And on the other extreme is someone saying, why are you worried about the economy when we're talking about species being extinct? So you can see there's going to be really divergent opinions. But it's not a binary choice in my mind. There's going to be compromise. There's going to be things that we have to work through in order to keep the system working.
And if this two-basin committee, which includes the County of Mendocino and some tribal interests and environmental interests, succeeds in taking over the license of PG&E and is then responsible for the ongoing studies and the day-to-day maintenance. And, we don't know how much that's going to cost. How high are you willing to go on public money towards maintaining the project? At what point do we drop the paddle and say no?
Well, I'm always the optimist, so I'm thinking that there'll be some way for us to do a public-private partnership on some of these things, that it won't be all public money. There's going to be some income made from the generation of electricity and the sales of water to other places. But we have to look realistically at what happens if we can't break. We don't have a lot of extra money here in Mendocino County. We've got a reserve of about $10 million in our budget right now. So that's really not very much money when you think about running a $300 million budget. So everything I can tell you as a department head, we have to fight for every last little pencil and piece of paper that we get in our budget. So we got to be really careful about that. And it could be that people will end up having to spend more for water when it's done. And we'll have to think about how do we do some cost recoveries on this, because we can't write a check from Mendocino County. It's really clear.
Yeah. And you're also active on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act.
I am. Yeah. So I head up the technical advisory committee. So basically we're the interface with the consultants. They come to us and for a series of grant proposals that we've written to the state that are helping us to fund our program. And then we also have to guide them technically and give them a lot of information because they're consultants. They don't know everything that goes on in the community. So I also helped write the initial for the basin and how it worked. And I was a contributor to that from a study done by Sam Sandoval from UC Davis. So I'm really deeply involved in water issues. And I do have a degree in plant, soil, and water science. So it goes way back.
Yeah. Well, if callers have questions for Glenn McGordy, the number to call is 895-2448, and we're on the air for another 10 minutes. Let's go back to the caller who's just called in. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi. My question has to do with recycling. We tried to take our recycling to the dump in Ukiah today. There are no more buyback centers around here, except for maybe Willits. I know that the stores charge a CRV, maybe 5 cents on each bottle. Do you know who gets that money? And maybe you could help us out with a buyback center for Mendocino, Ukiah. Thanks.
Great
sure.
Question.
So the recycling industry at the moment is kind of on its head because our biggest customer, which has been China, has been refusing a lot of our materials. So the CRV buyback program was started a long time ago with the idea that you wouldn't throw your empties along the roadside, and the theory was that you'd bring your container back after paying a deposit and you'd get the money back. So right now the money, since a lot of people don't do that, is just being swept by the state. And, that's something that's probably beyond the scope of Mendocino County being able to really effectively regulate anything, unless we start an ordinance and then everyone's going to tell us what we can't do. So, I wouldn't want to do that right off the bat. But it's kind of a statewide crisis and something that probably goes beyond our borders.
All right. It looks like we have another caller. Caller, do you have a question for Glenn McGordy?
Yes, I sure do. How much are you doing as far as really researching this climate change?
You know, in terms of the level of studies that are like atmospherically driven or more or less how do we respond to climate change?
The reason I ask this question is that I've done research ever since the 98 El Nino,
mm-hmm.
of which caused steel bars to rock back and forth here in Lake County.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I've done a lot of research.
Caller, do you have a question for Glenn McGordy, who's running for supervisor in the 1st District of Mendocino County?
Yes, it has to do with all of California. I was asking a question, what kind of research has he done as far as, is he aware that a lot of it is purposely being done by man's modern technology?
So I think the caller wants to know what I've done specifically on climate change research. So one of the things that I've been working on is frost prevention and trying to take it to a different level, which is rather than using water for frost protection, we've had a pilot project of looking at trying to manipulate the microbiome, the bacteria that live on the surface of leaves that nucleate ice. And we've shown that we can actually affect it with copper sprays to like an antibiotic that knocks the copper out. So, but the unfortunate part of my research, which also often happens, is that I've been doing this for 5 years, and normally we can count on 5 frosts of spring, and we haven't had a single frost since I did that research. At least during the grape growing season. So it's that's probably my most direct experience with climate change and kind of my bad luck of doing research on a topic like that. In the laboratory, we were able to demonstrate really well, though, that the approach works.
Okay. Well, we've got, it looks like the phone lines are clear right now, so I'm going to see if I can squeeze in a question about Measure B.
Measure B.
Yeah. Another topic that's on the ballot, so we're not totally sure, is if Adventist takes over the Coast Hospital, they'd like to work with the board and Measure B committee on offering psychiatric beds at their facilities. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that process.
So we have several things to think about here. It goes back to the ordinance itself of Measure B and how it wanted the tax money spent. There's an advisory committee. There's also the Behavioral Health Advisory Board that the county has. There's the Kemper Report. And these are all guiding what we should do. And I feel very strongly that we need to have good information and we need to pay close attention. And that hasn't always been happening recently. And I think it's really, we'll be making some really big decisions in the next 4 years. And that's going to be one of them, is how do we care for people who are in a mental health crisis? So the way that I read Measure B is that, first of all, we'll have a crisis response education program and a training center for it that would be for mental health workers and for also public safety people. We will have some sort of a mental health facility, and we're not sure what that's going to be. It'll be based kind of on what we can afford, I think. And then we'll have kind of follow-up care and residence program to go along with it. So these are all things that we have to work for and figure out what we can afford and how we can be effective. And as someone who's lived with a family member in a mental health crisis, we're not very well prepared right now in Mendocino County. Our level of care is very, very limited.
Well, we've just got a few minutes left, but since you did bring up how you were affected by the river fire, can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on emergency preparedness?
That's something that's essential, living in a rural community like this that we do, because, you know, calamities can happen. So we really have to have, first of all, good access in and out of places. That was really clear in the Redwood Valley fire, where unfortunately some people perished because they couldn't get in and out. And it's also important to have, you know, scenarios played out and have a good response when something goes wrong, whether it's a flood or a fire.
What do you think? All right, one more caller question. Caller, you're live on the air. Make it quick.
My question is, would you vote for more public transit here in Mendocino County?
Yes. I go to Europe. I love public transit, and I can't understand it. I mean, even Italy has like six major high-speed rail lines, and, you know, Italy is not known for its ability to organize things, but they have the most wonderful trains, and I'm wondering, why can't we do that in California? We have a great freeway system. I know we've got engineers here. But I would love it if we could get on a train and go to San Francisco. And of course, that's totally dream world. but even simple things like having reliable buses so that we don't have to use cars all the time would be wonderful.
All right. Well, we are just a couple minutes to the end. So can you give out some contact information or where voters can go to find out more about you if they couldn't get their questions in tonight?
So I have a website, which is www.mcgourtyforfirst.com. And McGourty is spelled M-C-G-O-U-R-T as in Tom Y. And I have a Facebook page if you want to look it up. Although I have to be honest, it's not my favorite way of communicating, but I have a real supportive committee. And I just like to tell you, I have a really broad coalition of people who are behind me, and I encourage you to kind of read some of the commentary that they have. They've been very kind with their endorsements for me.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Glenn McGourty, candidate for supervisor in the 1st District. Tune in tomorrow night at 6 p.m. for my interview with Lindy Peters, who's running for supervisor in the 4th District, and we'll be going all through next week until we have heard from all of the candidates who hope to represent you. And thank you so much for...
Well, thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Okay.